Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Bang Your Book Club. Woo, it's woo, the woo. Last one of 2016.
Oh, it's been such a ride.
Insert generic quote about how we can't wait for this year to be over. So Bang Your Book Club is a monthly podcast in which we talk about books about sex and gender. My name's Lucy Moon.
I'm Lena Norms.
I'm Hannah Witten.
And this month we read How to Build a Girl by Catlin Moran.
Yes, we did.
And that was reader's choice, may I add.
Oh, yeah, that was. Thanks, guys.
Good choice.
Good choice.
10 out of 10. Would trust you again. In fact, we have trusted you with the whole of the rest of the list.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Most of the picks that we've done for 2017 are stuff that I've seen suggested by people.
Yeah. Slash that I've never heard of and would probably never have heard of.
If it weren't for you guys.
So. And speaking of the 2017 Banging Book Club list, it is now live. You can view it on our Goodreads, or there'll be a Google Doc link with the list of all of the books that will be linked somewhere.
Yeah!
Other admin, Banging Book Club has a Twitter account now.
Yeah, we do!
So many sex gifts. What was our first tweet, Hannah?
Fap, fap, fap.
I think we're great.
So that is at Banging Book Club on Twitter, so go follow us. Because there'll be loads of sexy gifts, mostly aubergine and water droplet emoji related content.
Don't forget the peach.
And the peach. We love a good peach. I tend to use two trifles to represent tits.
Ooh,
because there's no one piece of fruit or veg that's like tits. You've got peach for bum, cherries for balls.
You've got me checking this out now. I want to see the two cherry trifles.
Two trifles, boobies.
Done.
Yeah.
You have to think now, because if I was like somebody at Apple that was like, who designs emojis? Who knows?
It's not Apple because it's across like all of them, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it is.
You have to think, if I was an emoji designer, I would totally be thinking about which body parts people were going to use emojis as.
What is the trifle? I found a creme brulee.
Yeah, that's that one. The creme brulee. The flan. Yeah, two flans, boobies.
I mean, I think this is questionable. Oh, you tweeted it, Lena.
Mischief. Absolute mischief.
Guys, can we get off our phones? This is a millennial problem.
Oh, my gosh.
It's all the dopamine going through your brain every time you check it.
Right. Can we do our initial noise review of the book?
Oh, yeah. Oh, also, spoiler alert, there's going to be spoilers. And non-spoilery review is on Lucy's YouTube channel.
Trigger warning for, like, sexual, assaulty kind of content. I feel like we talked a bit about that as well.
And self-harm.
Mm. And self-harm and depression.
Yeah.
Yes. And worth mentioning for all those people that tweet me saying, why do you not read the books? I've read half of this one, and next year I'm going to read all of them because we're having forfeits if I don't. Especially if anyone else doesn't.
You say forfeit. That sounds lighthearted. Punishment. it's going to be...
consensual S&M.
If either of us don't finish the book in 2017, there will be a formal punishment. We have yet to decide what that is. Either we'll come up with it, or maybe we ask you guys to come up with
the
that.
Audiences. Mm-hmm. The audiences? The audience will know.
Yeah, I think we should get you a get your own back chair that's above like a pool of guns.
Oh,
she's 10 pages from the end, crank it up.
I used to have such a fear of that TV show Gunge.
Great show though.
Show. Oh my god.
One day I want to be a parent that would be dropped into that. Like, that's my goal. They taught me everything I need to know about parenting.
Anyway, noise reviews.
Noise review.
Lena, you start.
Brilliant. Oh, I hadn't thought about this. We do this every month, and I'm
I'm
not prepared. Okay, how to build a girl, Caitlin Moran.
I don't prepare them. I just have like a catalog of sex noises in my head at all times. Doesn't it?
Okay, mine is woo.
That's a good one. Mine is like
Is that what your orgasm sounds like?
So it's
no,
like,
that was literally.
I was like, someone's gonna make an orgasm.
It needed to be a little bit sexual, but also like not too sexual.
Okay.
So that's the like, because I feel like it's always curtailed by comedy.
You can give us the last part of your noise review next month. Because I want to hear the,
when you finish the book. When you finish it.
That's how I know that noise review really ends.
Yeah. Well, next month we're reading 50 Shades. So let's hopefully not.
Oh yeah. If you haven't got your hands on 50 Shades yet, do it and read along. Or don't. Just listen to the podcast.
Yeah. How to Build a Girl is a Caitlin Moran's first fiction novel. Some people would argue it's YA, some people wouldn't. That is up to the person, but when it was released, there was a lot of arguments over it. Because
I'm
it
not
does
surprised.
Follow, it's a coming of an age story.
Yeah.
About Joanna, who grows up in relative working class, she describes it as poverty, in the 80s. When she's 14, 15, she decides that she doesn't really like who she is, and the kind of strapline is, I'm Joanna and I want to kill myself. Not physically, but metaphorically. And she starts to reinvent herself as this character, Dolly Wilde, and miraculously starts writing for a music magazine and travels to London a lot writing for them and kind of just does it through sheer gumption.
Yeah.
And starts hanging out with loads of adults at a very, very young age. And it's about her misadventures in London and how she negotiates between Wolverhampton, working class life, and this cool, hip, drug-filled world of London and the music scene in the 80s. Also, she discovers sex.
You say 80s, I'm pretty sure it's set like 1990 or 1991.
Yeah,
it's like the early 90s.
Sorry, I did a bad
research. Lena, I think.
Just like before I was conscious.
Just before, yeah. Yeah, that's essentially what it's about. There's a lot of themes in the book that we're going to talk about. First of all, sex, because we are the banging book club and we read books
and
about
sex. So much sex in this book.
So there's a lot of sex in this book, and we're going to talk about the sex, and then we're also going to talk about things like class, and then also Joanna / Dolly, the character, and the narrative style, and Caitlin Moran's language, and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, woo. Sounds good.
So, sex, ladies.
The amount of sex in this book made me think that lots of other books about coming-of-age stories and YA...
need really, more sex.
Where is the sex?
Need more sex.
Like, I'm like, this is an accurate amount of sex in the book.
Literally, page one is masturbation. Like, she's masturbating from page one.
And it's not even like... I didn't lose my virginity until I was, like, 19. So I'm not saying that my childhood was filled with sex, but it was definitely filled with talk of sex and themes of sex and worrying about sex.
Oh, my God, so
and
much
learning
worrying.
About sex. Yeah, like, a lot of her thoughts are about sex, and that is way more accurate than...
But then the amount she thinks about sex, I like, was reading it, partly worried, but then also partly, like, no, accurate.
Yeah, you're like... I find that's, like, a trope in a lot of YA that I used to read was the... coming, but maybe also the chick flicks, like the coming of age, I'm still a virgin. Like, it's generic and cliche because it's kind of true. Like, we all, at that age, I think, we all worry about how much sex we either are having or aren't having, or, like, what our parents think we should be having, or, you know. That is a part of growing up.
And it also makes me think that, like, are a lot of YA authors really patronising? Because I think, you know, like, so for me, if I see two 14-year-olds kissing on the street, I'm like, oh, they're too young to be doing that. They're not.
No.
Like, that's normal. But I think when you're, like, inherently
most YA... I was
doing
a lot of dry humping when I was 14.
I can only imagine.
I was doing stuff that cannot be said on podcasts.
I was at Bible camp, guys. The book opens with her discovering that, like, the really cheap toiletry place around the corner from her is selling dildos to teenagers for 88p, and then you realise they're deodorant bottles.
Yeah.
And she realised that deodorant bottles are perfect dildos.
Yeah, she used to use the end of a hairbrush, not the bristly end, obviously, the handle.
And then she upgraded herself to a shoplifted deodorant bottle.
Called Mum.
So... she is really sexual from a very young age. Mm-hmm. She wanks in the bed next to her little brother. That was the only bit that I was like,
weird about that.
Although her six-year-old brother is in the bed next to her, and her older brother is like in the bed, like on the other side of the room to her. But then there's a whole thing where her brother Chrissy moves out of that room and moves room because he's been kept awake at night from her masturbating.
What?
Loudly.
Oh my god, when's that in the book? Good lord.
I'm starting to realise as well, like, I don't know if we can talk about class and sex separately because they're so intertwined.
Yeah,
because
every time I go
to talk about sex, I'm talking about class. And that's what's really clever about the book is that, like, her sexual experiences are always public, but that's because there's not enough space for them to have privacy.
Yeah.
And, like, privacy is, like, a luxury.
It is a luxury. I realised from a very young age that I was given privacy by having my own room and was incredibly grateful for it. That Rowan and I didn't have to share a room.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of my friends did have to share rooms with
us. I had to share bunk beds with my brother in a really tiny room till I was like 11.
Yeah.
I remember like maybe 10, I stormed into my mum and dad and I was like, I'm wearing a bra. I need my own room.
Oh, wow. I shared a room with bunk beds with my sister until I was 10.
Yeah.
But speaking of the family, Chrissy is gay. Never like openly mentioned that he's gay, but he's very much... what's the word that Rowan would use? He's not...
WWRD.
Not marked.
What would Rowan do?
Not marked. Symbolised? No.
It's like foreshadowing. Or it's like...
It's not foreshadowed. He's just... Fuck.
Just heavily implied?
He's like... There's a word for it that Rowan uses in all her videos when she's talking about LGBT representation.
It's like a raised, though. No? Like...
What Chrissy's...
No, like, well, because I was going to say, is Chrissy gay?
Yeah,
like,
Chrissy.
Can somebody clarify it for
I me? Think Chrissy is gay.
I think that too, but then I was like, maybe I'm just impressing my
bigotry. At the end, he's all like, I want to have sex with Robbie Williams. And Johanna's like, oh, this is great. Chrissy's going to take me to the gay clubs and I'm going to have a gay best friend.
Yeah.
Oh.
But then she says to meet a gay best friend.
Yeah, but why would she need Chrissy to get into the gay clubs if he wasn't gay?
But then maybe that's her putting her view of Chrissy onto us.
Chrissy has... Or he's asexual because he has no sex life, but he is also, like, living at home in the same
situation. But he really wants to know about the sex, like, when she has sex. It's really cute. I think that's such a cute, like, basically brother and sister moment. He finds out that she's had sex, and then they go into this really dark cupboard, and he, like, asks her all these embarrassing questions, and then he's like... Okay, let's never speak about this again.
I think he's more curious about the man, though, and that's why he's asking those questions, maybe.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Okay.
I don't know. I think Chrissy is gay.
I would say he is probably gay.
He's represented that way without it being explicitly said, but I don't know.
But I quite
like that. If that character is gay, and that's the way that Catelyn's decided to represent it, I like that way of doing it.
I just feel like because everything I feel we're like... hearing is from Joanna's perspective. She is such an unreliable narrator on some level.
Yeah.
But she kind of identifies it. She'll be like, oh, I thought I was really funny with that joke, but no one laughed. You know, so she does acknowledge when her faults
in
are.
In those moments, I was like, this is Lena.
Other people think that too.
I did think you'd see yourself in this book.
Just, you know when you want to see yourself in a character? I'm like, oh my god, it's me. But like, it is me.
Really?
I do think she's
all of my stuff, even the sex stuff, I was like, oh my god, this is me.
Can we
jump ahead with the sex?
I was reading it thinking, because I know how much you love the book. Like, I like it, but like, you love it so much. I know. And I was reading it, I was like, it's because Lena is this character.
Yeah. Well, I thought it, but then... I also found the character to be a bit of an incredible caricature as well. So, like, whilst it's amazing the ground that's covered and how it covers taboo subjects and how it covers growing up, it felt like a weird sitcom, but not like a realistic sitcom.
Yeah.
My life is a weird sitcom.
And she's from the Midlands.
Yeah.
Should we get back to the sex?
Yeah, sorry.
Back to the sex.
So, have we covered masturbation? Do we want to move on to actual
sexy
times that
when
Dolly
she moves
has?
On in her life, she actually starts having actual sex, and this is like a
Does
huge
she move
deal
to London?
For her. Yeah.
At the end of the book, she moves to London. Oh. Right at the end. But
okay. Most of the time, she's, like, commuting.
Yeah, she's in between the two.
Yeah.
So the sex that Dolly has is interesting. So what I think is most interesting about her sex life is that she wants to have sex so bad. Mm. She doesn't really have many romantic aspirations other than John Kite, which we will talk about John Kite. Mm. But she's very sexually driven. There's like no romance, even with Tony Rich, who she's like, I think he's my boyfriend, I think I'm his girlfriend. She never wants that.
She just wants to know which it is.
Yeah,
it's
interesting. But with her, the sex that's motivating her, it's because she wants to have all of these experiences. She wants, in her words, be legendary.
Do you think she's a bit immature?
Oh,
from that?
Yes. So immature.
Because that's, yeah, all the way through the book I get the feeling.
Sex for her is like a conquest.
Yeah.
She's like, if I have sex, I'm more valuable as a person. And if I'm good at sex, then I'll be like this legendary sex adventurer lady person. But then the sex that she's having is like kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah. But then it's also interesting because she's immature, but you realise as the book goes on that she's just quite, like, she's doing it in the way you don't expect because it's quite, like, what is perceived a masculine way to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, so at the end, like, she has this revelation where she's like, I'm not your conquest, you're my conquest. I'm the one who caught you. Like, I'm not naughty or dirty for having sex with you. You're dirty for having sex with me.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
like, gets really indignant about it. And it's, like, that power thing of just being, like, she wants to be the person to
initiate. In control.
And, yeah.
Well, that's even more explicitly played out when she, like, introduces, like, a bit of S&M with Tony.
Introduces S&M?
Yeah, and then she's like, yeah. I always thought I would be the S.
Yeah, she's, like, she thinks... In her head, what happens is she introduces it, and then Tony basically...
S&M in this instance?
So, pain. So, the in this...
What, like spanking and like choking?
There's a bit of spanking, but mostly like the hot candle wax thing.
Oh, wow.
And so...
That feels very 90s.
In her... Oh, no, it's on the rise. Everyone's doing it now.
I'm learning so much.
It's coming back. But in her head, the way that she says that she imagined it was... her inflicting pain on him.
Mm.
But then the reality of what happens is that he's like, oh yeah, sure, we can do that. And then she becomes the submissive and he is doing it to her. And she's like, oh, okay, I guess I can roll with this. Even though in her head...
But she's always like, I've always imagined that I would be the sadist and... Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
That's really interesting because no one ever really discusses... submissive and dominant sex, particularly, unless it's in the context of mildly abusive stuff, I feel. So it's quite nice to have it discussed.
Yeah. This wasn't necessarily sub-dom stuff, it was the sadomasochists.
Yeah.
I always get confused.
Yeah.
We'll learn more about it in 50 Shades, I guess.
It's coming.
Because I just assume that, like, she'd be submissive because she didn't know what she was doing. And
no, she's so... forward. She'd like, it's like, I want to have sex with you and I'm going to have sex with you. And
that's really cool.
She's very, you never get the sense that she's not wanting the sex that she's having, but you do get a sense of like, she's searching for something and she thinks that she'll be happy if she has all of this sex, but that's not ultimately what she needs.
Yeah.
Like, she wants it, but she doesn't... I don't know,
but
it's
like,
one of those...
What I appreciated about it when I first read it was that, like, there weren't that many bad implications of her having sex. Like, I think a lot of the time it's, like, a lot of...
Bless you, Lucy.
Go on, start that again.
Oh, it's fine. What like, really released me from, like, I don't know, something that I had locked inside my brain when I first read it was this idea that, like, it wasn't that bad when she had casual sex. Because I think a lot of, like, women are in these books and they have casual sex and then, like... they're
bad
punished
happens.
For it in some way, like they're emotionally damaged or like they realise that it was this awful thing they've done in their lives and they just shut that chapter and move on. And for her it's just more like part of the journey. She just has this like casual sex that's like, I'm a lady sex adventurer, and like it doesn't damage her that much. There are parts of it that are really negative, and then you realise later that it's like it is not the most ideal way for her to be having sex, but it's also just so lighthearted.
Yeah. Can we talk about Big Cock Owl?
Did you read Big Cock Owl, Lucy?
No.
Don't you have a feast ready?
Oh my god, a feast. Wait. Great word for it. I was on a train from Manchester to London reading the chapter on Big Cock Owl with a 4-year-old sat opposite me.
So is it meant to turn you on, or
it's
is it?
Supposed oh, to no, be, it's she's like, funny. It's like so an funny. Infant's limb. She says it's that big. And he's like, fold it out of his trousers.
Yeah, and it's in 2 postcodes.
She's kind of just like, actually, I've got it.
Go on, get some out for me.
What does she say? Big cock owl. Anyway.
This literally made me scream out loud. Hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That, I say in a very, very friendly voice, is a very large penis. Yes, says Al, quite urgently. Suck it and make it bigger. Ha ha ha. I will do no such thing, you joker. I'm not a lunatic. But what am I to do? This is quite a dilemma. Anyway.
I love how she laughs off the idea of making him more erect.
I will do no such thing, you joker.
Yeah, I'm not a lunatic.
What did she say? How did she describe her?
That's in her head, though. She doesn't say that outside. She doesn't say that out loud. Yeah.
When she says something like, What was the first bit you read? Read that first sentence again, because there is something
that's
about
that. That's a big cock or something.
That, I say, is in a very friendly voice.
That's a very big
It's
cock.
A very big penis.
That is a very big penis. I can't, and oh then, my gosh.
But like, what's, and then she gives you a guide as to like how to deal with having a big dick inside you. It's very useful, thanks.
So the best part of that list of how to deal with the big dick inside you is the idea of her, the visual image of her on all fours with him like fucking her from behind, but her like scooting away like so it doesn't go fully in, and she like talks about how she basically did like several laps of the bed on all fours getting away from
during our 10-minute session. I managed to make a whole circuit of the bed on all fours as Al ardently pursued me kneeling. It should be the best sex award.
It's so funny. But then the sad thing about this is that she gets cystitis because of the big cock.
I'm so scared of getting cystitis. I have never had it. Maybe that means I just haven't had sex.
Here's the thing.
What?
Her cystitis was extreme. I've had cystitis before because sometimes I forget to pee after sex and then I have a bit of a bladder infection afterwards. But, like, what the fuck happened to her?
It sounds really
sick. That is not cystitis. Maybe it's, like, really extreme cystitis because...
Well, it can turn into a kidney infection.
The symptoms that I have is just, like, needing a wee, like, all of the time, and then, like, when you go to pee, just, like, a bit trickles out.
And being uncomfortable all the time.
And then I just drink loads of water and it goes in a few hours. She's, like, feverish and in a bath for 12 hours.
Well, maybe you just haven't met Big Cock Owl.
Maybe
well,
not.
That's not, does it?
Also, I'd just like to preface what I did previously say with a disclaimer. I understand that lots of people get chronic UTIs. I'm sorry for saying just pee after sex. I know some of us have smaller tubes.
Smaller
is
tubes?
That how it works?
Yeah, so if you have a slightly smaller tube,
you'll get worse. Oh my god, what if my tubes
get worse?
My tubes are huge because
I've never
had it.
If you haven't had chronic UTIs yet, you're probably good.
I got big tubes.
Big
tubes. There's my next pickup line. So what I really, really like about this whole section, though, is that she realises that the best way to deal with the sex and the best way to have fun with it is pretending that she's him. And
But she does that with all of them.
It's fucked up.
What?
Yeah. Fucked up. But, like, it was heartbreaking because I was like, I recognise myself a lot in this.
Because she never, like, it's never about her pleasure. But then it's interesting because when we read this and we hear about women who only get pleasure from sex through their male partner's pleasure, because it is about, like, the male gaze, that to us is really sad. But then flip it and I really like men who get turned on by women's pleasure. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, for sure, but there's a
it's
level
weird,
of,
isn't it?
Everyone's got to be experiencing the pleasure, and it sounds like he's experiencing all the pleasure in this book, he being the general man she's having sex with, whereas she is experiencing none of the pleasure.
No, she masturbates, after he's gone to sleep.
So it's that's the sad part of it. If he was trying to pleasure her as well, but she was getting off on the fact that she was pleasuring him, then that's cool.
Yeah. But then the other thing that she says is that no one's made her come, but also she won't let any of them go down on her.
A lot of them don't offer.
Yeah, a lot of them don't offer.
Which
but,
I was like, Joanna, I'll
but she still says that she doesn't want it.
Yeah.
Which I thought is interesting.
Does she say she doesn't want it at all?
There's one bit I remember where she said that she doesn't, like, or at that moment, she's like, ooh,
it's
no.
It's like not part of the conquest. And
yeah.
The... But, but the bits vulnerability on yeah, some level, isn't it?
There's that, but despite it being sad that she's not getting, like, the best pleasure out of sex, I do like those moments where she says, I'm still the best I've ever had. And, like, I am my best lover. Or, like, the things, the bits like that, which I can relate to, Joanna. Like, yeah. Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to talk about relating to sex is also bodies and body image, because Joanna is self-proclaimed fat.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about how, like, that, how she sees herself in terms of being fat, but also, like, sex and fatness, because, like, we don't ever see any portrayals of anyone in media, books, films, TV, whatever, of fat people having sex, unless it's, like, we're laughing at them, and it's, like, this comedic thing, like, oh, yeah, who would, like, be attracted to that?
Girl that I accidentally had sex with once. Ha, 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 hilarious. I love it. Sorry, you go.
I was just going to say that, like, that bit where she's on TV and she looks at herself for the first time and is like, I am really fat. That is, like, heartbreaking, because I bet, like, half the women in this country have thought it at the same age at the same time.
Yeah.
And that was that what was heartbreaking.
That bit was so heartbreaking for me, when she was just like, oh, I'm not beautiful. And I was like, oh, Joanna.
Yeah.
But that's, like, it's so... Because I think also, like, she says that she don't have a full-length mirror in the house.
Yeah.
So she's never seen...
Yeah.
And I'm like... Does that, because she is quite confident in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And, like, during sex, she doesn't sound like she's being self-conscious.
Yeah.
And I'm like, does that come from just not having considered it very much? And
I think she's just, you know, really, really...
How's childhood released that?
The book is also set before an era of social media and constantly seeing people's best images online contributes a lot to, like, low self-esteem.
And also, hardly anyone is attractive at the age of 14.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we... I don't know, in your young teens,
yeah.
you are a bit of a mess.
I'm peaking now, guys.
I'm peaking now.
glowed up.
But there's a definite, like, there's such a sadness in relating to that when you're younger and you want to, you have the aspirational, what you think should be happening during puberty, and then you have the reality of, no, this is what's happening in puberty.
I had, again, she basically is me, but I just, my favourite part is, like, I remember this in the first time and, like, thinking about it a lot, is when she says, like, I always thought it'd be really hard for me to, like, have sex. Like, how was I going to do it? How was I going to find a man who wanted to have sex with me? I'm a bit chubby. What's going to happen? And then I got into the adult world and I realised that any woman could have sex whenever they want.
Yeah.
All they need to do is go and find a man and kiss him and she can have sex. Like, it's, like, such a simple revelation. It's like, women everywhere, if they only knew that they could have sex whenever they wanted to have sex.
Yeah.
She's so, like, childishly excited about it. And I was like, oh, I think I had that too. I was like, oh my God, like, women can just have sex.
Yeah. And I think what's great is that, like, her being fat, like, it's, you only ever see it being brought up when she's, like, on her own, but her being fat never comes into play in the sex scenes.
Yeah.
Like, you never see it being, like, a thing that the guy that she's with mentions, or, like, her in a monologue being worried about. Like, it doesn't play a part in that at all. It's, like, irrelevant.
Yeah.
And do you reckon her referring to herself as fat, which I know she does at the beginning, I don't know if she continues to, is... her perception of herself or her reality? Because it's a very harsh word that I think you'd use to, like, I don't know, you use to hate yourself.
Well,
I don't feel like...
At one point, she does give her bra size.
It's double D.
No, but the back size, maybe like 36 double D?
Or 38, I think.
Or something, 38 double D. So that is, like...
She's the same bra size, that's me.
Oh my God, really?
Actually, no, I'm not a D, I'm more like a B, so that's very depressing. But, like, my back size is, like, 36 or 38.
We're the same.
But that's just, so, like, she's not, cages, she's not, she's not a skinny girl.
Yeah,
so it's, I don't know how much of it is reality and how much of it is her perception.
Because I have no fat on my ribcage at all. Like, I can't store fat anywhere in my upper body. And yet, for some reason, I'm, like, a 32 to a 34 back.
I think it depends where your wire ends, like... I don't know. Yeah. If it ends really far forward, then that's bad. Anyway, I don't know. Can I read, like, one of the parts that was like, yes, I feel this is, like, something we talk about a lot.
Yes.
So when she's trying to decide whether she's in a relationship with Toby, and she's like,
Tony.
Why? Sorry, Tony. I just want him to be, like, the tiger from Frosties. Why can't I press a litmus paper to Tony's sweaty brow when we're fucking and see if it turns pink for love or blue for casual fuck? Oh, why is there no information on this? Yeah. And I was like, yes, imagine if there was. We need to, like...
I need one of those. Can I have one of those?
Yeah.
I need a litmus paper for my life.
There'll be, like, ultimate banging book club merch. Litmus test for whether you're having casual sex with somebody or not.
And, like, our own branded moon cups.
So John Kite is her best friend, kind of. Becomes weird. Her best friend.
How old is he?
24?
24.
Oh, okay.
He comes... They write him.
He sounds like this huge, old, burly man.
Yeah. She writes him old. Yeah. And Joanna just becomes, like, obsessed with him and, like, in love with him. But then they also, like, it's interesting because the way that it's written, I at first thought that her, like, love for him was, like, super one way. And it was just her. But then she was like, oh, we write letters back and forth, like, 3 times a week.
And he, like...
he writes letters to me and we talk on the phone all the time. And, like, and every time they do see each other, he's, like, so pleased to see her and...
But then we get to this idea of, like, him treating everybody like that, and she gets worried. But then I think it is real. It's just, like...
I do think it's real.
He's just a bit of a mess.
He's just weird, but he doesn't really, like, have much of a personality.
I don't think...
He says... Okay, so he says all of these, like, random statements and profound things. And, like, the way that he's written in the book, so either the way Catelyn writes him or the way that Johanna is remembering him or seeing him, everything that he says is as if he's performing. And it's like, you're just talking to one person.
That's really true.
But then
true.
Isn't that why they say they're like the same person and they're quite similar?
Yeah. But she does the same thing, that's true.
He does like, the zany pair.
There's this amazing description of smoking that I was
all about the baby dragon.
Yeah, I love it so much. And I came across it and was just like, Catelyn, you did good. Where is it? He laughed when I said I didn't smoke. I applaud you, Dolly, he said, lighting a fag. I applaud your fucking brightness. The thing is, when you start smoking, you think you've bought a fun baby dragon. You think that you've charmed a fabulous beast as your toy that will impress.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
All who see it. And then, 20 years later, you wake up with your lungs full of cinder and shite, the bed on fire, and you realise the dragon grew up and it burned your fucking house down.
I love that too. That's good, but here's my thing about John Kite. People don't talk like that.
Yeah.
Except for John fucking Kite, apparently.
Exactly. It's so
one day I'll find a man who talks like that, Hannah. You'll see.
You'll see. He'll be your perfect man.
Oh, really? Seriously, I'm in love with this
man. You like John Kite?
I've always fancied John Kite.
Of course, because you're Johanna Morrigan.
And he is a washed up rock star, and I know you've got a thing for Matty Healy.
Yeah. And also, like, the homeless look. I'm into that.
Who doesn't have a thing for Matty Healy?
Yeah. But the sex thing with John is that... So Johanna's, like, attracted to him as well as, like, I just want to be around you the whole time. You are my soulmate.
Just romantic language.
Your platonic soulmate, but also I'm in love with you and we're going to get married. He kisses her on the lips. And that's kind of like her first kiss, but it's not really a snog. And then later on, towards the end of the book, when they're drunk, after she's had her whole, like, breakdown at Tony's, she's all like, we should kiss. And then she doesn't remember what happens next.
Yeah.
And neither does he, because Yeah. But we assume that they don't kiss and that they don't have sex because...
I kind of love that Lucy doesn't read the whole of the book because I get to experience the emotion.
Yeah. And also again, you get to see, like, if anyone who's listening to this hasn't read How to Build a Girl, they can live my emotions at this point. Kiss.
Well, they don't. Well, you don't think they do. And then when they're talking about it on the phone afterwards, John Kite says, like, something about being too young.
And then she's like, I'm not too young. And he's like, no, I'm too young. I'm not ready for you. I think he's one of the most noble characters in literature.
It's really weird.
He doesn't I don't think he's noble. I think she's manic pixie dream girl him.
Because she is too young for him.
Yeah.
Even if he's not mature enough.
But he seems to be the only man who's actually realised that and doesn't touch her.
Yeah.
I'd imagine.
That's true.
Tell Tony
that. A lot of the men in here are...
Well, Tony's the same age as well. Awful. So she's 17.
Hmm.
At this point, she's 17.
Okay. Mm.
She's not a 14-year-old anymore, but still.
I'm sure that I feel like a lot of the men who are going to be in this book, well, as have many of the men who've been in it already, but the sexual partners especially, are idiots or treat women badly, is my guess. Because...
I mean, at least Tony didn't boot her out of the flat when she got cystitis. He went to go and get her
beverages. That was
Al. Oh, Al. Big fuck Al.
Oh, my God. But even, like, I don't know, it's very, like...
It's weird.
Pre-feminism... being something to discuss.
Mm.
And
well, as in, like, she doesn't...
Or, like, was there another sexual revolution in which we realised that women's pleasure is, like, actually of a much higher importance than we've given it? Not just the sex all the time.
We're still waiting. Maybe 2017!
Because the fact that we can comfortably talk about it on a podcast and talk about female pleasure like it's a given, as opposed to, like a... Not a given, but like a...
You say it's a given, it's still something that I think the three of us have all learnt and are still learning to feel like it's something we deserve.
Like
and
something we can talk about openly now, but I think it's something, like, speak for myself, but like I think it's something that we all struggle to, like, actualise.
But also to get to where we are now as well.
It's materialised for a lot of us, even though we all know it's a thing.
Yeah. I remember the first time... I ever had, like, a sexual experience with someone where I had an orgasm and they didn't, and that was only just over a year ago, and I remember that being a massive deal, and I remember, like, texting some people being like, I came and they didn't, oh my god, the first time ever, like, that's happened, that, like, they haven't had an orgasm, but I have, this is amazing, like, that's insane that the first time that ever happened to me was when I was 23, all of my other sexual experiences is either... me and them, or just them.
Mm.
It's never only me.
So interesting.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I didn't feel guilty about it at all. I was like, this orgasm is all mine.
Was he pissed or was he fine?
No, he's fine.
Oh, excellent.
Great relationship. I feel like, and this is me going completely back on what I just said, that would not have happened if he'd been pissed.
Yeah.
Feel like that's a sober
But do you mean
thing.
Pissed drunk or pissed angry?
Oh, I meant pissed off.
Oh, I thought you meant pissed drunk. Pissed,
but maybe, yeah. Maybe that too.
No.
Who can say? Okay. What did you both think about this idea of, like, the working class experiencing things differently to the middle classes? Because she talks about that a lot and she starts to realise that not everybody has her experience. And, like, a lot of her fears stem from that. And she says, the working class do things differently. I can hear it. I can see... we are not wrong. We are not just poor people who have not yet evolved into something else. Are you people with money? We are something else, just as we are. The working class do it differently. We are the next thing. We power popular culture, just as before we powered the Industrial Revolution. The past is theirs, but the future's mine. They're out of time. And it's this idea of, like...
I loved that passage.
Yeah.
Because Catlin Moran, like, in her journalism, talks a lot about... journalism not being funded properly, music being funded in a different way, and it meant that a lot of people who are working class can't be in those industries anymore or don't have access to them or aren't being mobilised upwards because of that. And she's like, all of the great journalism and music and art stuff came from that working class like sentiment and that working class thrust, and we're not going to have that, or we're not having it, and like, that's shit, basically.
I agree with that, because reading that and reading that bit, and, like, as someone who is very much middle class, I was like, that makes sense. Like, I'll never understand that, and it is different. And I'm definitely guilty of sometimes thinking that it is an evolution thing. Like, you go working class and then you earn some more money and then you're middle class. Like, but that's not how it works. Because yeah. I genuinely, like, used to think that that was how it worked. But then, like, someone like Caitlin Moran, who was brought up working class, but now she very much lives, like, a middle class life.
Mm.
But it would be interesting to see how if she identifies still, like, as working class and feels working class. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah, I think...
But the whole culture thing... I'm like, I can't think, like,
yeah.
A lot of people that I enjoy consuming content from are all people of maybe similar backgrounds to me.
Do you think?
Well, the thing about class is that in the past, like, 50 years, the working class has shrunk and shrunk and shrunk, and that's partially to do with the jobs market, like, completely changing and affluence increasing in general. I guess that's a horrible way of putting it, but the majority of people in Britain now are middle class, like,
but the middle class is huge now.
Yeah, completely.
Like, the range within middle class is massive.
So in a way, I don't know any working class people. However, I know people who live on council estates, and my nana, or like my whole mother's side of the family, you know, there's like...
But then what would you class as a working class? I grew up in the Midlands, and I know that a lot of kids at my primary school were poorer than me, and I know that I grew up in a kind of weird area, but like, I still feel very middle class. But then it's weird because like, I work in a newspaper, right? And apparently my firm is telling me this, there's a stats, 7% of people go to private school in the UK, 92% of everyone who works in newspapers went to private school.
What?
And I feel that hard, like, whether those stats are completely accurate, like, I need to look them up and find the sources. But a lot of people have said similar stats to me. I think it's a Guardian article that kind of sources it. But I'm like, I feel that a lot in my workplace. I feel so working class in my workplace, which is not okay, because, like, I'm definitely very middle class.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, no longer about financial stuff. I think that's the transition.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
It's about your location, your cultural values,
your social value as well. So I read a thing about, like, the different ways of measuring class, and so it was, like, financial, which included, like, your job, but also, like, how much money you have in, like, savings and things like that, and family money. Then cultural. And the cultural thing was interesting because it was, like, it's not about the type of cultural things that you're interested in, but if you are, the more upper class you are, the more likely you are to be interested in a variety of things. So, like, the opera and football.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I once read that middle classes pay for experiences, and that experience is seen as, like, money can't buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, like,
but then the other thing is, like, the social thing, which is, like, who do you know? So do you have friends that have certain jobs?
A confession that I'm, like, happy to put on the podcast because I genuinely believe it. But, like, I hire a lot of people. Like, I've hired a lot of people. I've done a lot of interviews. And if people put skiing in their hobbies section, I am automatically like, what the fuck, who are these people? Like, yeah, and like, it doesn't mean I don't interview them. It doesn't mean I try and treat them as fairly as possible, but there's this switch in my head that goes, how the fuck is skiing a hobby? That's an once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah.
Like, I would never go skiing. I could never envision going skiing. Like, I would never... Like, if my family were going skiing, I'd be like, what? Like, it doesn't make any sense in my head, and, like, that makes me think there are, like, that is true. Like, when we talk about the middle class, like, do we need more names? Because I'm like, those people, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah. There's such a spectrum.
And I think everyone perceives it differently. For some reason, like, skiing's a trigger for me, and I'm like, well, now you're
posh. No, skiing has always been something something that everyone at my all-girls grammar school were in a very affluent area. Everyone went skiing, apart from the people who, like, couldn't afford to.
Yeah. Such a bad thing. Like, if I ran a school, I would literally ban skiing trips. I'd be like, that's
Should we
no
talk
okay.
about the book?
Sorry, yeah, sorry. I just got off.
I was going to say, so Johanna's, like, from council estate, working class Wolverhampton, and then she's shagging this guy, Tony Rich, whose surname is fucking Rich. I'm sorry. Like, his surname...
Heavy symbolism, Catelyn,
thanks. His surname is Rich.
We got there.
And his parents, like, they live on this big estate or whatever it is, and he went to Harvard.
Yeah.
And wow. And he's got loads of posh friends. No, he works at the magazine, so he's also a writer. I find it interesting, she has a lot of the same prejudices against posh people that I have.
Go on, what are they?
Just posh, they're just the classic posh twat
thing,
which is something that I need to sort out, because I've, like, since met a lot of posh people, and they've been like, Hannah, what do you have against posh people? And I'm like, you're just posh!
I had to be like, okay.
I was once trained by this woman who's really experienced in publishing, and she was like set to train me for a few weeks on some stuff. And I'm not loud, but I am a bit gobby. My accent is, I think, quite like normal, but she obviously like picked it up and was like, and then like one day she just kept saying stuff, and then like, you need to behave a little bit more politely in this kind of company because publishing is very, you know, these are rich people. And I was like, okay. And then once she put her hand on my shoulder and she was like, you're not an Olivia, are you?
Wait, what does that mean? Oh my god.
Apparently, like, posh people are called Olivia, and I'm not an Olivia. But she said it in a nice way. She was like, you're going to do really well because you're not an Olivia. I was like, poor Olivia. Sorry to all the Olivias.
Wow. I've just had a moment of realising every single person I've worked with at an agency who's been Olivia, like a middleman, always an Olivia.
Olivia. Worked with a lot but of Olivias. She talks at the end about their names, and she finds it really interesting, and she's like, all their names, and like lists them, and she's like, these aren't names that will have to be like spelled out on a benefits form, like these names will be on like certificates and these names will be on their graduation scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and they're like, it's just like where your name is used, and like it kind of, yeah, it was interesting because I don't know where I sit with it, but I it's something that I don't really think about a lot.
Yeah. And did we talk about the bit of rough earlier?
No, let's talk about it.
So this is kind of like obviously where you can't separate sex and class.
Yeah, this is where they come at head, if you will.
Yeah.
Hey.
Where
this is where the spunk
is. Tony's party, and he's got his posh girlfriend, and then there's also Johanna, and yeah, it all just kind of comes. She overhears him saying that she's his bit of rough.
Yeah, or his friend says it to him.
Yeah.
While she's upstairs, and then she comes, it's really heartbreaking, and then she kind of, but it's great, it's like, that's the point in the book where I think she, like, flips, and she comes downstairs, and she's, like, gives him this speech, and she's, like, you're not my bit of, I'm not your bit of rough, you're my bit of posh.
Yeah.
It's not pervy for me to be having sex with you.
It's great, though, because but the thing that I then just really start to hate Tony Rich for is this whole, like, because Johanna's being, like, a bit dirty, a bit filthy, or whatever words they use, because she's, like, bringing S&M into the bedroom. She's clearly letting him do things sexually that maybe he's not done before with other partners.
Yeah, and his ex-girlfriend acknowledges that she's like, he must be having sex with you because you're having wild sex, right? And she's like, really wild.
And then Johanna, suggests having a threesome and things like that. And so she is sexually adventurous and confident, but then I think that what happens is that Tony puts her being like a bit dirty or filthy or whatever in bed, and he like puts that together with her working classness.
That's and like goes, the fetish of her.
Yeah, like, and it's like, the... she's poor and she's dirty and she's filthy in bed because she's poor. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's that horrible. Weird thing.
It's like side-showing it. And also, like, there's this horrible bit after she says the speech.
She's an animal, like, kind of, I don't know. Anyway.
She has this, like, huge angry outburst, and then she reels herself in again and thinks, and feels embarrassed, and is like, I ruined the party because I talked about class. I'm sorry for talking about class. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they ruined the party by talking about class, but she's, and then then she storms off and she's like,
social acceptability.
I have to go. I'm going to go and have a Marxist cigarette.
Oh my God.
It's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
I love it. What I was going to say for people who don't live in the UK, we haven't, class is like quite a big thing and was quite a big thing for a long time, especially because it divided the political parties.
Yeah.
It's a significant part of our like just social system.
Yeah, I tried to explain it to like American people, and it is just a different thing to explain.
Yeah,
I think it just operates differently. I don't think it's more. I don't know. It is extreme, but it's.
But as a weird social dynamic of societal structure.
Should we talk about depression?
Yeah.
Oh. I think we should trigger warning this.
Yeah.
Self harm. Can I trigger warning?
Trigger warning for like sexual. Assaulty kind of content. I feel like we talked a bit about that as well.
And self-harm.
And self-harm and depression.
Okay, so I love this book. There is one part in this book that I hate.
Is it the treatment of self-harm?
It's the treatment of self-harm.
Lena wins the guessing game. Yeah.
Catelyn, though.
What happens?
Okay. So, here's the thing.
This is the one part that I'm like, I wish that this had been treated a little bit better.
So, at the youth charity that I used to work for, I learnt a lot about how to write about
and deal with sensitive topics in younger people. And one of the things was when discussing self-harm, because it's something that, like, we had to talk about, something that can be triggering for people that do it or used to do it is actually describing the act of it and detailing, like, what happens. And so this, just something that I learned from working there, was it's like, okay, we can talk about it abstractly, but never, like, actually describe it. And then in this book, it is very much described, like, everything. And I don't really want to go into detail of exactly what's described, but it's, like, what she does and how it feels and, like, what happens next, like, physiologically to her body.
I was thinking quite differently about, like, how I, the treatment of it. So I don't...
That's one thing that I don't like about it. And then the other thing is that I'm not convinced that that character would do that. That's the other thing.
Oh, no, I'm 100% convinced. Not that
really?
Not being like, this is me, I haven't self-harmed, but, like, my issue is more, like, because I think with the describing it, it's like, what is the role of literature? Is it to be this safe teaching thing, or is it to represent what's actually happening? Because when people describe suicide in books, like, that's the narrative, like, that's the story. You're supposed to be thinking yourself as somebody else's experience. And because it's not marketed as YA and it's not shelved as YA, quite purposely, I don't know if it owes...
Maybe that's just from where we're getting charity.
I think if I was giving this to, like, under 18, then I would think that it should be treated that way. But I'm not convinced that we should leave that. I don't know, it's weird.
It's weird.
Is it, like, what literature's for? I don't think it's for that.
Yeah, but then, I guess we disagree, but I just, I was not convinced that that character would do that. It for me, this was a reread for me, because I read it last year, and again, it still shocked me. It's still like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Where did that come from? I don't understand how she went.
Isn't that what it's like?
I don't know.
We're just some girls in a room. My issue is more like the way they treat it afterwards, because afterwards she was like, oh, that was a silly thing for me to do.
Yeah.
God, I'm so, like, crazy. And then, like, moved on with it. And, like, while that's just one person's experience, and I'm sure people have had experiences like that, it's hard because it's the only character we meet in this book to do that, and also we have such little representation of it in literature anyway.
Sounds like it kind of, like, comes out of the blue. Does it come out of the blue?
Kind of,
but because she's the narrator, we don't know.
She, like, kind of spirals, and that's kind of, like, her lowest point. Mm. But the spiral happens really quick. And then again, like you said, the aftermath of it, so weird. And the way that she was describing it, it was almost like it was an afterthought of all of her sex adventures. Like, look at me, I'm growing up and experiencing things. I've tried cigarettes and alcohol and sex and self-harm. Tick, tick, tick. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's but what, like, it felt like to me. I was like, oh, what?
But that, oh, again, is it me? But I'm like, I know that I have done things that I'm like, that's what adults do. I've got to try it all.
Yeah.
I've got to, like, tick those things off. I've got to play that part, like that. And I'm sure that is an experience that people have, but it's also, I don't know. But then the interesting part is, like, afterwards she's like, I use this as a mark to say don't return there. Like, she looks at it and she's like, that's not where I'm going. Like, I'm not going back there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's, I don't know. It's saving grace, I think. But then,
maybe she had to go there to come back up. But no one has to, like, hit that kind of rock bottom in order to figure shit out, hopefully.
I had two things, just quickly. Enthusiasm versus scepticism, because at the end it's like she realises that she's been really enthusiastic about John Kite, and then she's been shamed for that because everyone's like, I think you're a bit too enthusiastic, Jo. And
she is an enthusiastic character.
Yeah.
And then she turns into a cynical bitch.
And then she's like, fine. And then she just hates everybody. And then she kind of comes to this place where she's like, all we have is enthusiasm. Like, cynicism ruins art. And she reviews this working class band in this magazine really maliciously, and then she realises that she's just, like, burnt the bridge that she just crossed.
Yeah.
It's like she crossed this, like, rope bridge and then set fire to it. Because she was like, like, nobody else will pass here, like, our cynicism first, and then she realises that enthusiasm is all she has.
I really like that message a lot, because I mean, we're both very enthusiastic people.
I know.
I'm very enthusiastic.
Like, this book was literally written for me. Like, this is, like...
It must be really nice to identify... I was saying to someone the other day, all I identify with at the moment is stuff about recovering addicts, which is, like, really, like, Oh,
and you always like, you know, whatever you're going through, you see yourself in.
Exactly. Yeah. So it must be nice to see yourself in something, in a character like this.
Yeah.
A complex character. Whereas I see myself in like Amy Winehouse lyrics. It's like, oh God.
Come to the Joanna side of the fan. We've got cake.
Can I just have like
and
a character
and deodorant?
Can I just have a Princess Diaries identification thing again? That'd be great.
What was the final thing?
Oh, like, so, like, Joanna's character in general, because I was thinking, like, how many loud, messy women do we meet as main characters in books? She's just so loud and so obnoxious, and I think in YA a lot, you meet the bookish, quiet character, because they know the people that be reading the fucking book is going to be quiet, and, like, for me, I'm always like, who the fuck are these girls? Like, they bore me, like, I hated the YA section when I was a kid, because I was like, I'm not this person, and they crop up again and again, and they're always...
I got bored of how many women stay silent in discussions and stuff. Like, I feel like a lot of YA is quiet, shy girl becomes more assertive.
Yeah, and then when she's assertive, she's healed. And I'm like, no, I am assertive and awful and messy and, like, embarrassing. And, like, I really like reading characters like that. I think it's like Tracy Beaker.
No, like not that kind Beaker.
Of, you know, like everyone loves Tracy Beaker because she's a twat. Yeah, she's a loud twat. She definitely has to go on a journey, but the journey isn't from quiet to loud. The journey is from like loud to like.
I once found
happy.
Danny. Loud to happy. Yeah, I once found Danny Harper's Bebo page, and I was scarred for life. She was drinking and smoking on it. And
who's Danny Harper?
The person who plays Tracy Beaker.
Oh.
I was like, this is awful.
I should be a bit unhinged to play Tracy Beaker though.
I was just going to say about the character of Joanna, I'm only halfway through the book, and things have taken a turn, but I find her as a character quite unconvincing, by saying it's like a sitcom character, it's not like a...
I don't know if this is bad, but I find her intelligence unconvincing, because of her age, but I don't know whether...
I don't think
she comes
across intelligent at all, I think she comes across really stupid.
No, but
in her choices she's stupid, but in her
pseudo-intellectualism.
Yeah.
Yeah, she knows about
how much she's read.
Amount that she's read, and like whenever she brags about like going through certain sections of the library, like Matilda, and I don't know. Maybe there are some people that were like that. Maybe I need to give 14, 15-year-olds benefit of doubt, and actually they're more intelligent.
Maybe I should have been a better 14 or 15-year-old.
Yeah.
When I went home for Christmas, I filmed a video reading out some of my diaries, like you did, Lucy. And I can tell you I am not that. That is where me and Joanna part ways. I was like, I cannot know.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I'm critiquing this.
Sentence structure says no.
But, like, my brain... I'm going to cough. Yeah, when I read back my old journals, which are written very similarly in structure, maybe, to this book, I am the most melodramatic little shit. I am awful. I'm like, oh, when will he love me? When will he realise it? Like, it's all about love and hate and trauma. And
she's not like that at all. Like, but is it because we led quite comfortable teenage lives and she's in a very different position, because she literally thinks that it's entirely her fault that her family's benefits are going to get cut, and suddenly they're going to be like really poor and not be able to survive. And
which,
like,
turns out to be true.
Which turns out to be true.
Spoiler. Oh really? Oh no!
It's because she left school, so they got didn't get her benefits because anyway.
But her family didn't tell her because they wanted her to follow her dreams.
Yeah, it's so cute, so fucking cute. But do you think that maybe being in that position and living in that kind of family with that kind of poverty would make you grow up a bit faster?
I think you'd still be writing about the same kind of stuff, because she's still writing about not having sex yet and trying to...
But it's the way her language is, like, so much more complex.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, I feel like when Catelyn Moran talks about her life, she seems to have spent, like, a very big majority of her life in the library.
Yeah.
Like, a scary amount.
Oh, really?
So I don't know. Who can say?
We were going to have a bit of a thing about... how much is this autobiographical? But obviously without speculating too much, because that's none of our business.
I think from what
I've read How to Be a Woman, and it's like a little bit autobiographical, yes.
Having read I think I've read everything she's ever written. I don't usually go out on a limb, guys, and say I'm an authority, but if you watch the TV programme Raised by Wolves, and if you've read How to Be a Woman, this is like somewhere in between there. I'm like, I think her parents are probably quite different, and her siblings...
Their siblings are different.
Siblings are different, but, like, the spirit of it is quite similar. Her career is quite similar.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know.
Cool. Final question, ladies. Would you have sex with this book?
Oh, yeah.
I guess the story is with this book. Just because you're having sex with yourself.
Yes. Which we've learned from the book is the best kind of sex.
Yeah. I would have sex with this book, but only in the second half of it where Johanna is over 16.
Oh, no, you've made me sound, like, illegal.
No, because you think you are her. So it's different. That's fine. You're just having sex with yourself when you are 14.
I'm sure that was stand-up in court.
I would not have sex with this book. I don't think there's a single book from Banging Book Club I would have had sex with.
But you'd be happy if your friend had sex with this book.
Yes.
You'd be happy if you were like, okay, I see what you see in each other.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, I'd have sex with Callum Moran. So it's like...
Okay.
But I think I prefer stuff like How to Be a Woman. Mm. In terms of, I like her autobiographical work.
In terms of the having sex with this book thing, I think I'm the same. Like, I would have sex with the book if the book was me. The sex that Johanna has with, like, other people is not great. But the sex she's having with herself is great. So, like... Yes, I would, like, you'd not have sex
with this book. Would we masturbate with this book?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'd masturbate with this book.
Maybe we created a third category to end 2016.
Woo! Thanks, guys, for listening to the final episode of Bang Your Book Club for 2016. Don't worry, there are going to be more in 2017.
So we deliberated long and hard.
Sorry.
It's fine.
Yeah.
We deliberated long and hard, mind the pun. Don't excuse it, just mind it. It might trip you over. And we took on loads of your suggestions and...
Created a fucking six spider diagram thing.
Potentially 4 hours of debating and post-it note moving on my fireplace. But we made it to 12 books for 2017, and I think Hannah's going to read us out the list.
2017 Bang Book Club reading list. January, 50 Shades of Grey. February... Nina is Not Okay. They don't all rhyme. March, Quiet Kind of Thunder. April, Doing It. That's my book, by the way. Just FYI, pre-ordered my book now. What comes after April? May, Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe. What's after May?
June.
Okay. June, The Game. July, Juliet Takes a Breath. Oh, did you realise that we put... Juliet in July. Anyway, I didn't realise that.
That's
nice. Anyway. August, Gender Games. September, Virgin Suicides. October, Come As You Are. November, Man Up. And December, Carol.
Yeah. Ooh!
Yeah.
It's going to be such a good reading year.
It is going to be good.
Also, if you've been to our Twitter page, you may notice that the description says... Fortnightly podcast. Yes, that is correct.
Sikes.
I breathed in too hard.
It's like making a podcast with Tiny Tim.
Gee, thanks.
So that means that you can expect more content from us. But don't worry, just one book a month. You only have to read one book a month.
Yeah, we're just giving you some extra fun on the side.
Tidbits.
Yeah, our little bits of rough.
Something casual to see at the weekend.
Our little bits of rough.
Mm-hmm. That means these have to be smooth, surely.
Yeah, I'm in a committed relationship with this podcast, and then the mini-sodes will be like my bit on the side.
Yeah.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes so you don't miss any, and if you want to leave us a review, that would be much appreciated.
Mm-hmm. If you want to look at the new reading list in more depth, we are going to link that below and tweet it out all the time from the Bang Book Club Twitter account.
If you've read How to Build a Girl and you want to share your thoughts on it, then you can tweet us at Banging Book Club.
Or join the Goodreads group.
Mm. Yeah. And loads of ways to get in touch.
And if you have any more feedback for us, please leave us a review on iTunes, especially if you liked it. It helps us out a lot. Thanks.
Yay. Thank you so much for listening and joining in. And come watch the vid on my channel.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Happy 2017.
Happy New Year 2017. Woo.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.